This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards. The redwoods of California defy easy description. They've inspired poets and philosophers. They've even been cast as the love interest by Hollywood. Here's a clip from the 1952 movie The Big Trees.
The giant sequoias are more than trees, friend. They are the everlasting living sign of our Creator's work.
Taller than any spire of any church.
They are our church, our place of worship.
Well, that's fine, but the redwoods are also synonymous with controversy, issues such as logging and habitat loss. That's why behind every living spire, there tends to be a person who made sure the trees endured. It's part of a series on big trees, NPR's Ketzel Levine traveled to Humboldt County, California, and the Avenue of the Giants to profile this legendary species and the people whose lives they've changed.
She called herself Julia Butterfly. She called the tree Luna. You may remember, in the late 90s, her two-year vigil living atop Luna in an attempt to save it from logging. What you might not remember is the sound of Julia Butterfly's voice as she broadcast from her perch on the tree.
Combine a wild bucking bronco ride, a ship in the middle of the sea during a storm, and put both of those 180 feet up in a tree, and you'll know what it's like to go through a winter storm up here.
She is positively giddy, on another day humbled or awed. Human reactions are rarely subtle in the presence of these unfathomably ancient and enormously tall trees. They have made men rich and women widows. They have moved generations of families to champion their cause. In Lucille Vineyard's family, back in the 1930s, it came down again to one woman and one tree.
On the day that they were going to actually cut the tree, my maternal grandmother took her lunch, rode her horse down there, and sat at the foot of that tree, and that tree stands today.
Lucille Vineyard has also spent her life protecting the coast redwoods. She is one of a long line of Northern California women who have pushed themselves out of their homes and into a life of advocacy. At the turn of the century, as the pace of logging accelerated, it was the state's women's clubs in their fine dresses and white gloves who rallied to protect the redwoods. Like Lucille Vineyard, they were moved to act by the very fact of these trees.
The thing that gets me, being an octogenarian, and I can look back so far, living in among redwoods, that I actually get choked up. And I have also noticed that in visiting any of the groves, people's voices all of a sudden quiet down.
Moving through a grove of immense trees in Humboldt Redwood State Park is so surreal. It's tough to get your bearings. Some of these creatures put down their first thirsty roots 2,000 years ago. To describe their beauty is to miss their menace. To speak of their size is to deny their grace. Fallen logs the size of beached whales, charred stumps, a team of horses high and wide, and in the air the scent of earth, bark, and compost stirred with the wind. Only 4% of the old-growth forest remains.
This guy's been through the works. He's gotten hammered, beaten on the bottom, burned on the middle. He's been wind-stressed. He's a survivor.
Locals say Dave Stockton knows more about the redwoods than anyone else around. He used to play in them as a kid, counting sticks of dynamite for his father. His father was a logger. He used to tell him they could cut and cut, and there'd still be no end to the redwoods. Today, Dave Stockton's in charge of the park's visitor center, interpreting the forest and speaking for the trees.
And the reason he has survived, look up that tree. See the twist in that bark? That's why he's still here. Splitters would avoid him like the plague. That'd be too much work to split a tree like that. And if you look at the large trees around here, you see some distortions in the grain. And the only one of the very straight ones.
So this was the key to their survival, were their irregularities.
That's right. This is what you have remaining. But they are good, healthy trees.
Not everyone finds solace among the giant trees.
I wouldn't build a chicken coop in the redwoods. It's the most dangerous place you could possibly be. But you as a tourist will never know that until it happens. And I hope you never see it, because it could be fatal.
Oral Whitlow owns a 1,000-plus-acre ranch just a couple of miles from the Avenue of the Giants. Though certainly among those devoted to the Redwoods, he's got his own opinions about how to ensure their survival. Oral Whitlow disapproves of the state park's hands-off policy as a means of managing its forest. He calls it wasteful. He's watched weak trees fall and valuable lumber go up in flames. He suggests the park's approach is guided by too much reverence and not enough sense.
I was born and raised in these trees. I've watched them all my life. I'm 70 years old. You can't come out of the city up here and say, oh, I got lots of respect for these trees. You don't know what you're talking about. You haven't got a clue.
His relationship with the Redwoods is all-consuming. They are his work, his life, his home. Oral Whitlow is fourth generation on this land. He now works it with his son Rex. But unlike the first Whitlows, who cut most of the giant redwoods a century ago, Oral and Rex have set themselves apart by the way they manage their trees.
What can you do to benefit the forest by taking that tree out? If you take that tree out, is it going to benefit the forest? If the right tree is picked, it will.
See, our ancestors were stockmen. They didn't know anything about timber. They pretty much tried to kill these darn trees, but they didn't have a whole lot of luck.
There's only a handful of old-growth redwoods left on the Whitlow Ranch now, much to their disappointment. But as the two men survey the dense young forest around them, Oral Whitlow smoking a pipe, Rex Whitlow using a knife to scrape the dirt from his nails, it's obvious the two men are more than ranchers. In their own way, they are guardians of these trees.
From the time I was a little kid, I could see things disappearing, and trees disappearing, and none of them being planted back. You know, of course, we didn't know anything about planting trees then. So when it came time for me to take over, I made sure that things weren't completely annihilated. Otherwise, you wouldn't see what you're seeing here.
Tell me what we're looking at.
Right now, we're looking at my grandson's inheritance. They're going to be able to log it just like we do, as a matter of fact. And if they're the least little bit careful, they'll be all right.
Back in the state park, among immense untouched redwoods, now aware of the dangers here and alert for the ominous crack of a tree, the giants take on distinct forms. One has bark like a lava flow in waves of black and brown and gray. Another is crisscrossed in stripes so thick they could be roots on the outside of the tree. What's most amazing is that nothing is dead. Even on fallen logs, dormant buds kick into action. Left to live another couple of centuries, they will make future generations giddy and angry, reverent and awed. Ketzel Levine, NPR News.
There are photographs of Ketzel's trip to the Redwoods at npr.org.
The growth is rank and deep and luscious and bottomless.
Next Wednesday, she's on the trail of a giant Douglas fir, bushwhacking with a big tree hunter.
Straight down, do you think?
Yeah.